Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Bear Down Ballers here on the Field of 68 Media Network. I'm Ryan Wall, joined once again by Jordan Pollock. And Jordan, it was a sad sight to see when the Arizona Wildcats lost a close one, 77-72 last week in the Sweet 16 to the Clemson Tigers. How are you doing today, first off? And then what are your first thoughts on how this game went down?
I'm doing well. We're reporting Thursday before the Final Four, which is in Phoenix, which is awesome for the state. I know we were hoping that hometown team would be repping in the game, but it's a good day. It's a beautiful morning. Louisiana's starting to warm up, so it's getting a little harder and harder for especially workouts outside. But I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And yeah, it's great that the Final Four is right around the corner, but it's kind of hard each year. It seems like your heart just gets ripped out from you when Arizona doesn't come through when you expect them, because not every team, as we know, has high expectations and as high as the expectations that Arizona has had coming into these tournaments the last 3 years. They've been to two Sweet 16s in the past three seasons. In the Tommy Lloyd era, they came up short in both those Sweet 16 matchups. But Jordan, all season long, one of the main things with this team that we've talked about is the guard play and the three starting guards, that is. Kylan Boswell, Pella Larsen, Caleb Love, those were the three main guards. And we've said that they're going to go as far as those three take them, and they just had one of their worst shooting nights of the season, or just terrible overall. 8-for-33 is only 24% from the field. You're simply just, you could win a game like that if other people, we'll get into some other pieces for Arizona, but it's just, and that makes it so much harder. And from the very start of this game, we've talked about Arizona not getting off to very hot starts. This was one of those games. They didn't get off to a great start, and I could just tell right away, Arizona was just flat. And they seem like when they get to this three-game mark in the tournament, they kind of reach the point where they just can't push any harder. And this was one of those games. Boswell only had 3 points. He was terrible, 1-for-6, and Larsen only had 8. And then Caleb, 5-for-18 from the field, just wasn't an elite Love game. What were your thoughts on those three guys in this one?
Yeah, I think I listened to a Mick Cronin interview with Colin Cowherd last week, and I think he said it the best, that this team's really good, but like they're just so streaky. And I think that's kind of been a thing throughout this season, is these games they've lost. They've just like had terrible shooting performances, and what they're super strong at is shooting the ball, getting high up in tempo and transition. And when the transition game isn't there from start to finish, they kind of rely on their shooting, and they've got some guys that can get hot and cold really quick and really fast. And that's the biggest thing I saw from this game. And you talk about when they get three games in the tournament, things just kind of slow down. I think one thing is like matchups really become super important the later you get into tournaments. And that first Sweet 16 run they had with Tommy Lloyd, they just ran into a team that was a lot better defensively and a lot better in transition, and that really forced them in more uncomfortable positions than that team had been in. And I feel like it's very, very similar with this Clemson team. Like the biggest thing to me from this game and probably this season in general, when Arizona was forced into the half court setting, they struggled a lot to get open looks. Bless you.
Thank you.
Yeah, to get open looks and to hit down shots and to isolate guys in certain positions. And as much as we talked about the offensive like improvement in dynamics from this year to last year, they were able to run more half court stuff because they had a very dominant post up center in Tubelis. And I think that's one thing you've stressed the last few weeks, is trying to get the ball to Umar Ballo more. And I think
100%.
That's a pretty clear thing with pretty much every Final Four team we have that's still alive except Alabama. And Alabama just plays such a completely different style that we've really never seen it in the Final Four of college basketball, where it's a high 3-point shooting and layup team, to where every other team, Purdue's got Zach Edey, UConn's got Donovan Kalingan, and NC State has DJ Burns. Awesome centers in the game right now. They all pretty much have a different way of playing too, which is awesome for the game. Nobody's playing the same exact way, but still their offense at times can run through those guys, specifically NC State and Purdue. Their offense fully runs through their centers.
But Jordan, the one thing I want to add there is their offense runs through those guys, but the reason they're so good to me is that when those dominant big men get the ball and they have to dish it out or give it to someone else, they have those guys that can hit those big shots. Each of those teams, they all have big-time shooters. And, I mean, Alabama is the best out of those three at shooting the ball from deep. But all of those teams have capable shooters. And you mentioned that this Arizona team, we talked about shooting and scoring, but the reality is this team never had an elite three-point shooter. Their season percentages could tell you different a little bit, that some players, you know, were a little above average this year. But the fact is Arizona never had a true reliable go-to scorer or shooter on this team all season. I remember at the start of this year, I was kind of telling myself and thinking that now that they don't have Tabellas, they have so many guys that can beat you, so many guys that can score the ball, but maybe it's best if you do have a dominant big man down low, a skilled big man that is, like Tabellas, unlike Balo, and then you have a dominant guy on the wing that can really shoot the lights out from deep. Maybe that's the best way. I really think that I've came to the conclusion that this group, I just don't think fit well enough. The last few weeks especially, I've continued to stress that all five of their main guards, including Bradley and KJ Lewis, who we'll get to in a few minutes, who've been really good down the stretch, they all excel and are at their best when they're driving and then dishing out if they don't find their look down low to their teammates. None of them are at their best when they're catching shooting from deep or they're finding the mid-range. None of these guys are those type of players. And so I think that Tommy really needs to do a better job of not just getting the best talent, but getting the best talent that fits well together. We see these other teams. You mentioned NC State, and Alabama has guys from junior colleges and mid-majors, and so mm-hmm. does UConn. These teams find guys that fit their system. It doesn't matter if you're a five-star or four-star. You got to play your role and fit the system well. And I really think that more blame needs to go on Tommy Lloyd's shoulders, because I know this, and we'll get into this more in a little bit, but I know it's his third season, Jordan, but you're expected to do more and produce better results when you're a top two seed in each of your first three seasons. I get the first year if you come up short, the second year, but at this point, the game plans and the way they start these games in the postseason is just ridiculous. It's not great, and I'm not saying it's all on coaching. I never believe that, because as Caleb Love said after the game, they take and have to make the shots, not Tommy Lloyd or any coach,
mm-hmm.
but I just think they just seem like they weren't prepared enough to me.
Yeah, I think it's challenging, especially with Tommy Lloyd's not said this, nobody said this, but I think it's just a lot of feelings I get, especially being a Bucks fan when we had Bud, is like this team, like their style is just random at times. It's like take what's open, take what they can give you. And I think the roster's kind of filled with guys where it's like I can do a little bit of everything. And so I understand your point, and I think a little bit more of it is, even specifically, I don't think roles have really been defined a ton.
Not at all.
I think that can be super important, especially with this team, because I think it's good to have guys that are able to like score more than 20 a game at random and have really anybody is a threat. But also, when you have times when guys are missing shots, then it's been pretty much every big loss throughout the season. Everybody just kind of like looks around and figures out who's going to go off that day. And that's hard to do. And I think especially, I look at Alabama. I love what Alabama is doing. And they're the only team left in the Final Four that doesn't have like a main post that they run everything through. But Marcus Sears can get you a bucket at any point in the game, either off his dribble drive or off his shot. And I think I was hoping Caleb Love would be like that. But again, it's just been the same story with him his entire career. He's just super inefficient. And he'll have games when he can't miss. And he'll have games where he can't hit the side of a barn door. And,
yeah, I agree.
And that's just a reality with his talent.
Yeah, and if you run the tournament 10 times, like, you know, you kind of sim it a couple 10 times, a couple of those times, you'll get an elite version of Caleb Love, like as you just said.
For sure.
You know, he's so inconsistent, and that's why Arizona, you know, has such a high ceiling at times with Caleb Love, and then their floor could be very, you know, far from where their ceiling is, just because you don't know what you're going to get. And that's the tournament, you know. That's why we love this tournament, because Clemson, by no means, like we said, is more athletic and even on paper aren't better basketball players. I still believe that than Arizona, but when it mattered, they played the better basketball game. They were physical. They were tough. They made big shots. And I mean, PJ Hall is a really dominant big man. He's really skilled. Chase Hunter made a ton of big shots for them, really good guard. And yeah, they just have a bunch of solid pieces. Ian Shefflin, 14-7 in that game. And yeah, they just play the right way. They play the right style of basketball. They don't have anybody that hogs the ball or that, you know, takes too many shots when they're not on their A game. They don't have that problem because they all just kind of come together and do what's best for the team.
The best month of the year is here, which is why you need to know that we are partnered with BetMGM. We'll be using BetMGM lines for making all of our picks and predictions, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use bonus code FIELD and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's the best part. All you need to do is deposit and bet $10 of your hard-earned money to get it. This is what you have to do to make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using that bonus code FIELD. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game. You'll get up to $1,500 in bonus bets if your bet loses. Just make sure you use that bonus code FIELD when you sign up. Most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the rest of the NCAA tournament. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boost, and the thing that I love the most, a nice little parlay boost, as well as a ridiculous array of prop bets for anything that you could possibly imagine betting on. From odds on getting to the Final Four to national championship futures, I'm calling it right now. BetMGM is the king of the prop bet. So go download the BetMGM app. Use that code FIELD and sign up today. And while I've got you, a quick request. The best way to support the Field of 68 content you get for free is to engage with us. Rate and review the pod in any podcast app. Like and share the YouTube videos that you enjoy. Tell your friends about us. It all helps in a world where the algorithm is king. And now, back to the show.
All right, Jordan, moving on a little bit throughout this game and talking about some good for Arizona. Probably the best player for Arizona in this whole game was quite of an unexpected one. That's Jaden Bradley, the second-year guard off the bench, finished the game with 18 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks, even 4-for-9 from the field with 2 three-pointers. He really did a little bit of everything in this game, and he showed that with more minutes, he played 25 in this one, he can continue to progress his game, grow, and just add more to this team as he continues to do. What do you think about his game and what you saw this past week?
Yeah, I completely agree. He's very deserving of those minutes because he is super reliable on the defensive end. He's a playmaker on the defensive end. And I think that's right now one of my biggest criticisms of of Boswell through this season is last year his role, he came off the bench and he was just going to get in people's faces on the defensive end. And this year it was like, hey, you're a starter. And it almost seemed like he was like, cool, well, I'm going to see if I'm on for a game offensively. And then I'll just try to stay in my guy's way. And I'm not going to try to be a pesk or be a playmaker on that end. And I think that's a part of the roles that needed to be defined. Hey, like, you're gonna shoot when you can, but you're gonna be a defensive juggernaut. And I think he has the talent to do that. Like, we saw it last year. He would come in and wreck games for other opposing guards. And I think that backcourt defensively is insane if they both play up to their potential. And I think that's one thing that Bradley did. And I hate the excuse of like, oh, well, he's a starter. He's being asked to give his effort on the offensive end. That's such a cop-out to me. You wouldn't be playing basketball if that was the case. If you only want to play offense, go play football or go be a forward in soccer. You know what I mean?
I totally agree. That's not a real answer, an acceptable one for that. But Jordan, something else that I've talked to you about, and just something I've always thought, is that when you do come off the bench, your mindset's different. Because when you come off the bench and you're like a Bradley early in the season, especially, minutes aren't defined. You don't know how many you're going to get. Same with KJ Lewis. So you're fighting tooth now for every single minute that you get. You're putting all your energy into that. And you're trying to just make an impact no matter what, whether that's scoring a basket, whether that's stealing a ball, blocking a shot. And that's sometimes when you do get more minutes, sometimes your stats go up, your production increases, but other times that's not always the case, because some players have a hard time adjusting to that role and have a hard time adjusting to kind of being that, you know, being that dog off the bench, that guy that's fighting for every loose ball, because you're only playing 10 minutes. But then when you're playing 25, 30 minutes, you got to kind of balance how you play. You know what I'm saying? Because that's just not sustainable. So but that's not is not an excuse for the level of effort that Boswell's put out there a lot throughout this season. And he's been disappointing this year. But the one thing I will continue to say, and then I texted you after the game, he still is only 18 years old, will only be 19 at the start of next year. And if we take a step back now, where that we're about a week removed from the season, his first full season as a starter, about 9.6 points a game, you could round that up to 10, about 3.6 assists a game, and shooting it about 38% from three, those aren't horrible numbers. He was averaging under 5 points a game last year. I know it was in a very limited role at times, but you really have to judge it and take it with a grain of salt, because it really was his first year and really his true freshman year when you look at it. There's very few guys playing at 17 years old in college basketball. So, although he's looked bad, he looked very bad in the Clemson game, I still hold out a lot of hope that Boswell can be that guy. And, Bradley looks better now, but I also don't think they necessarily should be fully compared to each other.
Yeah, because they are different kinds of players. And we're talking about that during the game, actually, is just how different Bradley is off the dribble. And he seems, at times, he can get to the basket no problem. And I think that's a really bright thing to see from a sophomore. Is if he stays in the program, by the time next year and the year after, if he gets at least somewhat of a mid-range and maybe a little more consistency on a three-pointer end, he can be this team's bucket getter, I think. And I think that's awesome. And I think a guy like Boswell, I agree with you, his role should be defined. Hey, you're going to shoot threes. I know you prefer him off the dribble, staying in the point guard position. I think I would like to use him as a catch and shoot guy. I think they would work really well and complement each other really well.
Yeah, but as you mentioned the number one thing and my kind of reasoning why I like Bradley in the combo role type position because he's a bucket getter. Like you said, I
Yep.
totally agree with that. He's a guy where if he's standing on the perimeter, you throw it to him, he's doing maybe a little fake step and he's in the lane quick as anybody in the country at that. So, and he's so elite at scoring the ball at the rim. I actually think it takes away if he's a full-time point guard, because when he's played, yeah, he's ran the point, he has, but I don't think he's ran a traditional point. He's not, dribbling the ball up, running the offense. And I actually do think Colin Boswell was. You would see they would run offense where Boswell would bring it up. Maybe he would just cross half court, then he gives it the key shot, and then there's Pelo running off a screen or running around the corner of the perimeter and getting everyone involved. So I think Bradley could do that, but I actually think the other way around. I actually think Boswell is better on the ball because I don't think that he's a true elite shooter. I guess if we would have to see if he had a full season of catch and shooting threes, but we kind of like in his first year, he did play more off ball, and yeah, he did do a lot on the defensive side, but he was nowhere as efficient as he was on offense. I think that they could try this pairing out, but I still and I really like both players, and I really like KJ Lewis for the future. I just don't think that any I don't think these guys really mesh well together. I'll just say that. They're great players, they're elite prospects, but what did I say earlier in the show? You have to have guys that fit well together.
Yeah, and I think a part of that though can be like role defining, because like you said, like you've said at least off air, is this team just has so many guys that are like each other, and I think on paper it doesn't look like they fit, but they are different players, and I think if you get the roles kind of defined and figure it out, so it sounds like you want Bradley in more like a two combo guard slasher role, right?
Yeah,
And I feel like.
and I would like actually not a pure two for Bradley, but I actually think if they tried like a 50-50 split where it's like you bring it up five times, I bring it five times. Not like that, but mix it in and it's just even. Like you don't know who's bringing it up that time, and then they would run the offense. I think that could really work with these two actually.
I agree. I completely agree.
Yeah, and if they tried that, I think it could, and that's why I'm but while me saying that it doesn't fit doesn't mean it can't fit, and doesn't mean that Lloyd and the players can't make it work, because they are very talented players. And like I said, we'll get into next week about a full roster breakdown for next year, but I hope none of these guys transfer. I want them in the Arizona program for the future. I think they're
Agreed.
very bright, they have very bright futures, even though this didn't go Arizona's way, and Arizona has a lot of uncertainty. Balo had 15 points, 15 boards. He had a really good game, 7 for 10 from the field against Clemson. He could be done in college basketball. Same with Pelle Larsen and Caleb Love. Keyshawn Johnson is out of eligibility, but the other three guys could return to Arizona. What's your first thought, Jordan? Before we do a full breakdown next week, would your first take be to for one, two of Balo, Love, or Larson returning?
It's hard because I think the biggest thing that having returning guys does is that I think can at times limit your roster and kind of hurt your outlook on your future rosters, if that makes sense. And that can in some cases hurt guys' development. Although maybe in the short term your team may be better, but in the long term it could have repercussions at times. But we do live in an era of college sports where it's not hard to get guys and insert and plug in guys wherever you see fit. And as we've talked about, Tommy Lloyd has done an awesome job. But we've also, like, how I've seen it is I think he thinks that everybody's going to leave. That's why he's really worked on this specific class. This is his biggest class that he's recruited, with 3 4-stars and a 5-star, 4 guys coming in. That tells me that he expects at least 3 to 4 guys to leave. And maybe a part of that too is maybe he expected guys to jump in the transfer portal as well. And maybe that's a way he's kind of targeting. But if I'm a 4 or 5 star, I don't know why I would go to a team that their bench is transferring and all their starters are staying. That seems like a hard thing in today's era of roster building.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's kind of, you know, when you recruit players, it's in a weird time. So I think timing's a big thing, is that maybe Tommy thought if they go on a very deep run, Sweet 16's still good, still a good accomplishment, although we wanted more. But it's still for guys wanting more, like the Pella Larsons and the Caleb Love. And is that the last moment you want people to see, like for a Caleb Love of shooting 5 for 18 when you're not getting a lot of NBA buzz? I mean, that's just the reality of the matter. I think I think there's a role for him in the NBA if he improves, which, like I said with Boswell, taking a step back, overall, this version of Caleb Love is way better than the version of Caleb Love at UNC. It just is. The guy has shown that he's an elite rebounder for a guard. His passing has improved a ton. And I wouldn't be against him or Larson returning. I really wouldn't. I'm not saying I want all three of the seniors returning, because I do think you got to let the new crop of talent fully develop by, you know, establishing better roles. But Tommy Lloyd has shown that he's not a guy to do that. He's not a guy like, I mean, call it how it is, Mick Cronin basically took a developmental year this past year. He didn't get any true elite. He had one elite prospect. The rest were kind of lower level guys, but he said, like, you know, you got to develop the talent, which is true. But I don't think when this day and age that Tommy Lloyd is going to let a year just go by, especially when you've already had some success in the tournament. And you know that, you know, it's your team's always kind of like a transfer or two away, especially with this level of talent already, from making another run. So yeah, we'll see on that. Overall, this year is really difficult for me to kind of put in perspective, because 2 years ago in Arizona's first year of the Tommy Lloyd era, like I said, the expectations weren't where they are now. So Sweet 16, Sweet 16's great in year one. Last year, year two, lose the Princeton 15 seed in the first round. And then this year, to me, a lot of pressure on Lloyd, and got to the Sweet 16, 2 wins, which it looked like that might not even happen a couple weeks ago, but they got the 2 wins in the tournament. But I really think that it's just not enough, especially with this history of this program. And we've saw Sean Miller. Yeah, he struggled a lot too, win the big games. He went to multiple Elite Eights, Sweet 16s as well. He had a lot of success. And it's just, for this team not have gone to an Elite Eight in over 10 years at this point is just, it's pretty crazy to put that in perspective. But what are your overall thoughts of this season?
Yeah, I agree. I agree to an extent. Like, I think the regular season success has been awesome to see, especially over the last few years. Outside of this year, UCLA has been a really hard game in and game out for Arizona. Back-to-back years, played them in the Pac-12 title game, won both of those games. Huge wins for this team. And Mick Cronin had done kind of what you said, like Jaime Hawkins was a 3-star guy that he took and he developed. Same with, I don't think Tiger Campbell was a 5-star either.
No.
He's super big on loyalty and developing. And it's kind of funny that I think as you're saying that, it's like funny to think about. I agree. He basically took a developmental year, and it's like not tons of UCLA people were like super upset about that, you know? But the fact that like Arizona's like not, and they only get to a Sweet 16, it's like more Arizona fans are pissed about that than UCLA taking a developmental year.
I like comparing
the programs. It's just funny.
From a fan perspective. I know, but I still like that fans and people, media is holding Arizona to a high standard. UCLA should be held to that high standard too. They shouldn't be able to take years off. They're one of the most elite programs in this country. But Jordan, I wanted to just, you know, respond to this one thing you said, and that's the regular season success has been excellent, as good as during this three-year stretch is almost as good as anyone else in the country besides like a UConn for that. And it's just, to me, when you look back at it, though, nobody, you don't get anything for winning 82 games, I believe Lloyd won in the first 3 years, and winning multiple Pac-12 tournament championships, regular season championships. Nobody really, when you look back, nobody really calls home about that. Nobody really makes a huge deal about that, about how many people make a big deal about that when you're already, to me, when you're like a Hall of Famer and that tacks onto it, when you won this amount of games. But if you won, you know, if he wins a couple hundred games or whatever and never gets to that next level of that Final Four level, championship level, then to me, none of the regular season stuff is just very small on the resume.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, and McHale, all of the Sweet 16s, like anything below a Final Four is just put on the walls in the 100 section seats on the
Not put, it's not put on the wall if he wins 30 games, if he wins 25 games, if he wins 28. That stuff's not put on anywhere in McHale.
But this fan base, they want banner stuff, not just stuff that's going to sit on the top row on a wall with the year. And I completely agree with that. And I think what I will say is, and he's been getting a ton of buzz, and I've loved it, and I've jumped into his story. Dan Hurley didn't win 20 games until his fourth year at UConn, and that was their second year in the Big East. And his fifth year was when they broke through that ceiling. And it's a process. It's a process to build a program the way you want it to be. We saw drastic changes in year one of Tommy Lloyd, just from the offensive perspective. And then year two, he's throwing in transfers. Year three, he's throwing in more transfers and older guys. I'm really excited for where this program's going. Like I said, it's a process. It's his first 3 years. And like I said, I think right before the tournament, I don't think any head coach has won really an NCAA tournament within their first 4 years at a new job. Like it's pretty unheard of, but the trajectory is in a good place. He's able to get elite talent. As we're seeing, he's slowly being able to develop it. I think my biggest critique, just to kind of summarize, is I think kind of defining roles and maybe trying a little bit more to figure out in a half court sense how you can stay in games and get back into games when your transition game isn't there. But I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited for what the offseason is going to bring. But it still sucks. It's still tough, especially for where this program has been and where we can all see it getting back to.
Yeah, 100%. My last critique, if you will, when you compare other schools or other coaches, is that Tommy Lloyd did develop talent, but he also came into Arizona with elite talent already there. He came in with Benedict Mathurin, Azules Tabellis being the main two, and those are two of the best Pac-12 players ever, I'll put it at that, really. And obviously, before he got there, they weren't already elite players, and I get he did play a big part in developing those guys before they finished their collegiate careers. But that's, to me, where it's different. If you go into a new job, like you're Rick Pitino, you know, when you're going to a job and there's not elite players there, it's different. Expectations are different. But when you come in and you already have some elite level talent, I really think the expectations are different. But overall, like you said, I totally agree. I still like Tommy Lloyd, although the critiques I've mentioned, but there has to be constructive criticism, Jordan, and if Arizona wants to get better, you have to change, you have to grow, you have to adapt, and I think that Tommy Lloyd will do that. I still think he's the right man for the job. I really do. And yeah, people have had worse starts to their first 3 years. I know that. But Jordan, moving on, some other big news in the Arizona athletics program is that Arizona president, the 22nd president of the University of Arizona, Robert Robbins, resigned just a few days ago. He first got the job in 2017. So he's been here been at Arizona about 7 years, and he resigned after the reported $177 million budget deficit that Arizona's been going through the past year. And I just wanted to recap before it, just put everything out there for everyone of what's happened the last couple of months. So first, after the football season is where quickly Jed Fitch leaves, and then they hire the new head football coach. Robbins is still there for that. Brett Brennan, good hire. And then back in January is when Robbins in Arizona fired Dave Hickey, athletic director. And then they then hired in February a new athletic director, Desiree Reed.
Francois.
So my whole thing is that we've talked about the timeline of the events of that, him being a big part of some of these decisions, and now he eventually is gone. He said he resigned, but he would serve his term, which lasts until June of 26, which is over 2 years at this point, but he will step down if they find a new candidate. What are your just overall first thoughts when you saw this, and how do you think that this has played out?
I was really happy, to be honest. I've never really been a lover of Robbins, even to our time doing undergrad at the University of Arizona, especially just with some of the stuff with COVID. And it's crazy that last year that came out that a lot of the way he handled COVID was heavily affecting university finances, and he was taking pay increases during COVID. And I think it just got to a melting point. I think firing Dave Hickey was a reactionary thing for him trying to save his job and make it look like he's doing something in the way of trying to fix things, especially when people in the accounting department who even were at fault for a lot of the accounting errors really weren't held responsible to the fullest extent. And so I was happy to see it. I think Arizona can do better. I'm not saying anything against Dr. Robbins's character. I'm just saying a lot of the decisions I don't think made a ton of sense, and I don't think a lot of them benefited the university and its students, and in our specific case, any of really the student athletes. And I think I've said with some of the hirings that have been made, I think they've been pretty lucky hires in a sense. Really, Jed Fish is the only major hire that they've had that doesn't really have any like connection to Arizona. I guess even Tommy Lloyd, for a matter of fact, is in that same boat. But Dr. Robbins had a connection with Fish. I think he performed heart surgery on him, or brain surgery, one of the two. Yeah. I think it was heart surgery. And that's how that connection was made. I'm pretty happy. I'm curious to see who the Board of Regents can get. As you said before we started recording, I don't expect him to stay through to his term. I expect them probably to probably put a list together in the next few months and spend probably next of the academic year probably breaking down the list and doing hires. I don't expect a hire to be made any later than probably summer of 25.
I hope there's a hire made before the end of 2024. I know that's, you know, it's still about 8 months left in the year. I know if they're going to have, like you mentioned, a very big list, I assume, and they're going to spend their time evaluating who they think could be the next president. But yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly. Robin's time here was really weird, and it got weirder, as we know, towards the end. And I just think he wasn't transparent with everybody at the end with some of the stuff that happened with Fish. 1 minute you think they're you know, have a great relationship and this, and then you see that he's getting on a plane, he's going to Washington, and all that stuff's happening. And then the Hickey stuff was really, I think we both agreed when that happened that we agreed it was just it was just like a waiting thing. Like whenever that Robbins is going to be gone, it's just a matter of time. And now is the time. It seems like this is also a good time for Arizona to get a new president. They do, obviously they do have a big deficit, lost a bunch of money, mismanaged it, but with the new hires also in the athletic department, I think a new president would be good to pair along with those few. But yeah, I also agree with that. A lot of these hires did fall into their lap. I know Lloyd didn't have too much kind of, he wasn't linked to Arizona, didn't have history per se, but I still think that he was on the West Coast. He respected Arizona. Arizona still has one of the best traditions in college basketball. So I kind of, and it was the best job available that year. I think Arizona had a, yeah, it was good timing for that one. But yeah, any last thoughts on, or other thoughts on this Robbins, this big news?
I would say one tweet I saw that was interesting. I can't remember who put it out. It might have been Brian Peterson. But it was talking about how Robbins is like, was the most supporting president of the athletic department that Arizona's ever had. And it kind of made me start thinking a little bit about it. And I'm guessing the main source and the main idea behind that tweet was how much money that he had put towards the athletic department during COVID when they lost so much money. And I think from that perspective, I think it kind of makes me feel a little bit differently of like, oh, like he understands the importance that athletics places within the university, especially with Arizona, and just how important it is for the city of Tucson. Like we've been talking about teams in their cities, like University of Arizona is the pro team in Southern Arizona and the 100%. whole region, much less the city of a million people in Tucson. And so I think that's one thing that I will give him his flowers on is he did understand and he did respect how the importance of the athletic department. And that's ultimately what's probably going to get him ousted.
That's the main reason
he was ousted.
I get that. But also it seems like he might have mismanaged some of the finances there. And he did. I mean, he did. It's a fact now. But yeah. When I saw this, I also kind of thought that I don't just think he resigned out of the goodness of his heart.
I agree.
I think he's been getting pushed out for a while now. I think the Board of Regents has been pushing back on him, and I think they've just continued to back him into a corner until he's just kind of been at a place where there's a place of no return, and that he couldn't reach good standing again with the university. And so he decides, but I also think they agreed probably that, you know, we'll let you put out that you resign and we didn't fire you, just because if, you know, he looks for another job in the future, I don't know if he wants to work more, or he's, you know, he's getting up there mid 60s at this point. So I don't know what he wants to do. But overall, I think we could agree that this was good news for the future of not only the University of Athletic Department, but just the whole University of Arizona community. I think it's for the better. But Jordan, before we go today, I wanted to give some picks for the Final Four. You mentioned it's taking place near Arizona, not too far in Phoenix. It's taking place at State Farm Stadium, where the Arizona Cardinals play. The first game on Saturday in the semifinal is going to be number one Purdue taking on the unlikely underdog story of number 11 NC State. The Wolfpack is in the Final Four for the first time since 1983 when they won the national championship. Mm-hmm. So this is a big deal. Purdue, they've been knocking on the doorstep for years. And I thought before the tournament got a lot of picks wrong, as we all did on our brackets, but I did think that Purdue was going to break through this year. And I think that they're going to win this game. DJ Burns, DJ Horn, former ASU player, is coming home back where he played. Been a great story all year, been unbelievable to watch. DJ Burns is one of the most exciting players I've ever watched in college basketball during my lifetime. And Purdue, they have their own big man in their own right. The best player in college basketball all year, Zach Edey, probably going to win back-to-back national player of the years. But to me, their guards have been very good and better than I originally thought. Fletcher Loyer, Braden Smith have been really good on the outside, and think that's, like I said, you need other guys to hurt you. I'm going to go Purdue with this one. I think they're going to get to the national title game on Monday. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I agree with your point. It's like that's been a huge thing with this Purdue team is the improvement from their guards when they are given the opportunity from Zach Edey on a wide open look, kick out looks, or just when they're open in transition. They've done a great job. It's a hard pick for me because I think in my head, I think I've pretty much conceded that Purdue is their year in a sense. Like everything's just kind of working for them. They get into their half court set so easily. Zach Edey is just like literally untouchable on the court and with the people in the white and black striped shirts. But I think the DJ Burns matchup is really hard for him. He hasn't played a center as good as him in this tournament. And DJ Burns in the elbow area, I think, is so elite. And I think his ability to just use his body in awkward angles and to use the glass and to use floaters and to use hook shots, I think it's going to be pretty hard for Zach Edey to defend, to be honest. So I'm going to ride with the upset. I'm going to ride with 11 seed NC State making a return to the national championship for the first time since 83 when the Pac did it with Jim Valvano.
Yeah, they're 8.5-point underdogs. And yeah, they've won. Their stretch back to the ACC tournament has been unbelievable this season. And yeah, I think they can win that game if they slow Edey down, which obviously Burns isn't 7'7", 7'3" or whatever like Edey is, but
he's 6'9".
Yeah, but he's bigger in weight and he's very strong and he's a very tough guy to get through in the paint. So yeah, that should be a good one. But the best game of the semifinal, it's the UConn Huskies, the defending national champions, taking on number 4, the Alabama Crimson Tide. This game, I was surprised when the line came out. It's 11.5 favoring UConn. I think Alabama is going to keep this one in the number. I think they have a real shot to win this one. But like I texted you after UConn made it to the Final Four last week and they beat Illinois and blew them out. They've blown everyone out. They played, and it just seems like nobody can touch UConn. Every game I think, oh, this team, Illinois, if they do these couple things right, they can break through. But I've kind of surrendered. I just think UConn is just – I think they're so much better than everybody. I really do. So I think they're going to beat Alabama. I do think it will be a little closer within 10 points. But, yeah, like you said, I do like to watch when Alabama's hitting their shots. They're very excited. Grant Nelson, elite big man. Mark Sears, one of the best guards in the country. Aaron Estrada, really good wing. But yeah, I really just think UConn, their trio of guard / wings with Donovan Clingan is just going to be too much for Alabama, because I don't know who's going to guard Clingan. They don't have Grant Nelson. He's tall, but they don't have a true big man to match up. What do you think in this one?
Yeah, I agree with the point. And I think that's where a big part of the game will be decided, is how Clingan affects the game on both ends. In that Illinois game, Illinois could not literally get a shot off in the paint. They could not get a shot off. And the second he got on the bench, they were able to score. And so Alabama's a little different. They're okay not shooting layups because they'll shoot threes. But if you get out and you start covering them on the three, they're going to go for layups. I love Alabama. I hope they go on a run. They're my favorite team that's left and just the way they play. I agree, though. I think UConn's going to win this game. As I've said, I've just kind of taken a deep dive into Dan Hurley over the last week. He's done amazing things with that UConn program. I think they're going to beat Bama by about 10.
Yeah, he's an elite coach. So we have different matchups. I have it UConn Purdue, the two number one seeds. That would be an elite matchup, an incredible game. That's the game that
it would be.
I would assume most people would want to see, because it'd be Donovan Clingan versus Zach Edey, two of the best big men in the country. I think, like I said, I think UConn's going to win. I just think they're too good. I think this team feels different. I think it feels like they've just been on a quest to repeat all season long, and nobody can do anything about it. So I'm going to go with the Huskies to repeat. First time since 07-08 when the Florida Gators did it. So it's been a long time. I think they're going to do it. You have it, UConn taking on NC State. DJ Burns versus Donovan Clingan.
Another fun matchup. I think UConn's going to go back-to-back, though. They're just so good.
Yeah, and I think that this is the first time that I'm fully backing UConn, so I think they could choke it with my luck. But I want to thank everybody for tuning in to today's episode of Bear Down Ballers. We'll have one last episode next week recapping the full season as a whole, looking ahead to the off season for Arizona basketball. But you can follow us for now on Bear Down AZ Pod on X. Follow the Field of 68. He's Jordan Pollock. I'm Ryan Wall, and we'll see you next time.